What's up, everyone? It's Chappelle here with a very special episode of Rob Has a Podcast. I announced this week on the Nothing But Netflix podcast that Rob was allowing me to talk about a subject that is close to my heart in the form of a new TV show on the CW. Today, I will be talking about the premiere of the show March, a docuseries on the CW following the Prairie View A&M University marching band, also known as the Marching Storm. So as an alum of Prairie View A&M University and a former member of this very marching band, it gives me great pleasure to be able to highlight this show that is centered around my alma mater and an organization that literally changed my life. But enough about me. I'm sure I'll be able to sneak in some cool stories from my time as a member of the Storm way back in the day, in the olden days. But to discuss this show, I reached out to the voice of the Marching Storm, the hypest and livest announcer around, the Jill Scott, better known as Miss Tierra Chapman, a.k.a. TT on the mic. TT, how are you?
Hey, now. Hey. I'm doing good. Ran down all my band facts. Good Lord.
Yes. TT, I'm so excited to have you here. How you feeling?
I'm excited to be here, man. You family. You already know what it is. You already know how far we go back. So it's up.
Yes, of course. And TT, since you are my guest today, before we get to the episode, is there anything you want the listeners to know about you? Where are you from? When did you crab? What do you do? TT, give us the rundown.
All right, so I am TT on the mic, proud announcer of Prairie View A&M University's Marching Storm. I was born in Houston, Texas, Southwest, raised in Triple D, and grew up in Lancaster, Texas, Lancaster High School, Weibo Nation stand up. I played trumpet since I was 10 years old. What brought me to Prairie View A&M University was the State Fair Classic. My father bought the ticket for the game, but my mother took me. And the moment I saw the Marching Storm, I said I was going to do that. And so when I came in 2011, under the direction of Prof. Mark Gordon, as well as Dr. McQueen, that's when I joined the Marching Storm. And the rest is history. It's what, 10 years since I've been here, and I'm still doing my thing. Been announcing since 2015, MCing since 2014, and, you know, just trying to do my thing, man.
Yes, I love to hear that, Jill. I remember, I'm sorry, I'm calling you Jill, but yeah, your name is TT. TT on the mic.
Not many people know about that Jill Skylight.
Right. And I do have to explain that. So I asked TT, I said, hey, when did you crab? And what, you know, in band talk, that means what was your first year in the band? Like, when was your freshman year? Right. When did you pay your dues as a bandsman? When did you get your swack hours, if you will? And so back in the day, they used to call TT Jill Scott. That was her crab name for the unindoctrinated or whatever. So in legal terms, yeah, it just means your first year, you know, that you're a crab. If you're familiar with Drumline, you know, white t-shirts, all that good stuff. I don't know if they still do that. TT, they still crabbing or not?
Hey, I'm a proud announcer for Prairie View A&M.
Look, I'll take that. Now, TT, when I reached out to you, I thought it would be fun to get your perspective on the show as a potential guest because we get along so well and you have so much insight into the Marching Storm because you were the announcer. But I was shocked to find out that after I reached out to you, you revealed that you too are featured in the show. How did it feel when you found out that the CW would be filming and that you would be one of the characters the CW focus on at some point in the season?
I was definitely humbled, grateful, and excited. I felt like it was a great opportunity to showcase the Marching Storm, and not only just the band, but also the culture of HBCU bands. And for me personally, I thought it was a great opportunity for people to understand what it's like from an announcer's perspective. Oftentimes we are the first and last to be heard, but the easiest to be forgotten. And it's good to finally have that perspective of the voice behind these infamous bands that literally shape the culture of the HBCUs they represent. So that was really big for me, something that I really wanted to hone in on, and I look forward to seeing that happen this season.
Oh, yeah, that's so well put. I mean, just thinking about it, like, you can't have the band at halftime without the announcer, and you do such a good job. I'm so happy that they picked you as one of the characters. Even though we don't get a lot of you in this episode, we do see some glimpses of TT, y'all, and I will point them out as we come across them in a synopsis. So I'm very excited for that. Okay, and before we start, I do want to give a shout out to the official after show on YouTube, The Calm, on PVAMU TV with Coco and Cam. It looks like those students will be covering the whole season of the show, and they are making me proud representing the College of Communication at Prairie View A&M, the very college that I graduated from. Exactly. And so, yeah, before we begin, I guess I should give my background with the band. I mean, the listeners know me as Chappelle, the person who can't stop talking. But back in the day, way back in 2007, I crabbed in this very band as a trombone player. I was a member of the trombone section, TNT. I cherish my time with those people, with those individuals, and I was very happy to see what the band has evolved from since, like I said, back in the olden days of 2007, 2011, you know, Exactly. So yeah, so shout out to the band, shout out to the trombone section, and yeah, shout out to the College of Communication, because look at that, look at us. Who would have thought we're here now?
Who would have thought? Shout out to the Epsilon Psi chapter of Tau Beta Sigma National Honorary Band Sorority, Aleut Vassal Award, as we celebrated our 46th Charter Day yesterday. What a great day for the show to be premiered on, as it was Charter Day and Marching Storm Monday. So that was dope.
Yes. And shout out to TBS. Okay, yeah. Jill, so are you ready?
I think so, friend. You got me a little nervous.
No, let's talk about it. Okay, so the show opens with none other than my guest here, TT. As we jump into the episode, we start with the introduction of the Marching Storm and the explanation of what Prairie View A&M, HBCUs are, and what the style and difference between a historically Black college and university is like as compared to its like predominantly white counterparts. And so we see the students here saying that the HBCU style is all about competitiveness and culture and swagger. And I definitely can agree with that. Like, I've worked in education at many different levels at many different schools, and there's just nothing like a historically Black college and university, especially Prairie View A&M. So just some background about Prairie View A&M. This is the second oldest public institution of higher ed in the state of Texas, second in age, but second to none, of course. Opened in 1876, the same year as another A&M school that was located about 45 minutes down the road. Mm-hmm. Because Prairie View was established during the Reconstruction period after the Civil War, because Black people were not allowed to go to Texas A&M. In fact, due to the Texas Constitution, the Constitution pledges that Texas A&M and Prairie View had to be created because separate schools had to be created to provide for the white and the colored children, and impartial provisions shall be made for both. So when they made Texas A&M, they had to make Prairie View A&M, and they are linked by law as outlined in the state constitution of Texas, which is crazy. But I feel like that's something that they drill into our heads as Prairie View students. Would I be right in saying that, TT?
Yeah, one thing you're going to learn first once you come to Prairie View A&M University as a freshman, especially if you get to go to Panther Camp, is the history of Prairie View A&M University. You're going to learn about the Unknown Eight. You're going to learn about how we were built on a plantation. You're going to learn about the previous names of the university. And you're going to learn about the grass that you are not allowed to stand on and why you're not allowed to stand on that grass. And what does it mean and what does it signify for not only our HBCU, but for so many HBCUs. And I think that that's really important because it's easy to live lost. So mm-hmm. when you come, I think that's why HBCUs are so important, because you get to realize who you are and where you come from and how standing on history is going to catapult you into the future, more aware of who you are and what you're more capable of, what people sacrifice for you to be here. So, you know, yeah. I get to preaching, child.
This is the time. That was beautifully said. That's the history of Prairie View and a little bit about HBCUs, but let's talk about the history of the Marching Storm. They talk about being a part of the Storm as being a part of a prestigious organization, a part of a strong legacy of excellence, and a performance level that is far above other bands. So we know in 1989, a group of students came up with the name The Marching Storm. But TT, what can you tell us about The Marching Storm as far as its history or as far as what The Marching Storm has meant to you since around, you know, the time where you were aware of its impact?
I remember, like I said, I was 15 years old seeing the Storm for the very first time, and a lot has changed. But that fire that I saw at 15, that magic that we have, it's still in there today. It's still in us today. I remember like hearing so many testimonies. You go to a homecoming, you, especially if you're wearing a shirt that has anything with the Marching Storm on it, on this campus, on Prairie View A&M University's campus, you're bound to walk into someone who marched in those boots long before you were born. I get so many testimonies from fall 1993, spring 86, marched in fall 91, and da 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 da. I remember when it was the SOS and da 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 da. And like, you hear the stories. And, you know, when I was a freshman, you know, we had it. We had history right in front of us. You know, Prof. Gordon used to tell us about his years in undergrad and just what it meant to him. And you see why people went so hard behind the Storm, because we built this with, you know, blood, sweat, and tears with our bare hands. There was a time where, you know, it was just women. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go in the Anderson's Hall, I believe, you see the pictures on the wall. You know what I mean? And I take time to just look at that. Because it really matters. You know, it's so easy to get lost into the present where you forget to cherish the history. And so, yeah. But I think that's something that I think all of us should take more of a deeper opportunity to just get to know more about our history. It's so much more I want to learn about the Storm, even as a present announcer. It's so much more I want to learn about the history of the announcers for the Storm. I've actually remember speaking with like Carl and Adrian and so many other announcers, and just, I would love to connect with them and have that button. I remember one of my mentors before he passed said, you know, you're making history as the first announcer and first female announcer walking into the stadium and announcing for this band and this new stadium, and no one's going to be able to take that from you. And so just thinking about how we've evolved, I think that not only needs to be shared more, but I think it needs to be even documented even more and more and more, because history is only going to stay if you continue to share it.
Right. Agree 100%. And like, even just with my knowledge of the band and, you know, the Prof. Edwards days and the Prof. Phillips and Prof. McQueen and Prof. Jones and, you know, like Dr. Zachary currently, like, you know, it's a long legacy that we have to keep telling the story of or disappear. And so this show, I hope, is one of those things that we use for prosperity to say like, hey, look at what we did, you know, and look at what the students are doing now. And then 10, 15 years from now, people will still be able to look back and say, hey, this is a piece of our history. And so I 100% agree.
Definitely. I love seeing that. Like, my favorite thing is when I go to the games and you see all of these people that's marched before you. They got gray hair, but Marching Storm shirts on. And you just could tell by their energy. I can always tell by the way someone stands at that Storm. Mm-hmm. I was telling my kids, the current members, like, I don't know all y'all names, but I can tell by the way y'all walk, y'all are mine. You know what I mean? Because you just know. And I just look forward to seeing so much more of us. I look forward to being that old head 20 years later. Child, back in my day, baby, let me tell you, baby. Baby, yeah, that, I was in 2011, and I was at 10 years, and this is what I did with my 10 years. Let me tell you something. Like, I just look forward to being that old head that comes to the homecomings with a big old barbecue pit and 45 pans full of food to feed the band and all the students. Yeah.
No, I am currently that old head. I don't have no food for y'all, but I'm definitely old.
Well, we gonna have our own conversation.
Yeah, we're going to talk offline, but no, 100% agree. Okay, so as the episode starts, we are introduced to our first named character, the band director, you know, Maestro, the head of this whole organization, Dr. Timmy Zachary. They describe him as intimidating. He doesn't mince words, has a deep voice, and being that he was in the Army, there's a level of discipline that he exudes as a leader. Dr. Zachary says he can't get too friendly with the band members because you can't get things done if you're too buddy-buddy with everybody. You know, TT, you know Dr. Zachary. You've worked alongside and for Dr. Zachary. Give us some insight into your experience with Doc.
My experience with Doc is we have like three different tiers of a relationship. And we know which one that we're in at all times. I'm an empath, and so I'm extremely sensitive. I am very discerning. So I can just see by the, I don't even have to walk in his office. I can feel the energy to know where we at today. And so that's probably why I don't get cussed out much. I don't get in trouble. You know, I was a middle child growing up. I already knew when mama wasn't in the mood, I'ma stay out her way. Yeah. But no, you know, some people might describe Dr. Zachary as intimidating. I think he's professional. And I think there's such a negative narrative around being professional. And if some people are intimidated by professionalism, then maybe that's an area that they need to work on. With me and Doc, he's like a father figure. He's definitely a client because I'm booked through my own business to announce for the March of Storm and a lot of the things that I do for the university. And I also look at him as like that crazy uncle that just, you know, you can just talk smack with, but all of it goes into how I perform.
Right.
Every now and then, daddy got a, hey, get a line. You know what I mean? Like, especially if I have doubtful moments, you know, and I might need to snap out of being, I get more intimidated about the pressure of peopling me, if that makes sense, than I do about Dr. Zachary, because I know no matter how he comes at you with love. Even if it's in a disciplinary voice or tone, he comes at you with love because he know what you're capable of. And he is a mad scientist behind what he does. He's amazing at the way he leads. And, you know, you just know when he walks on that podium, it should be silent. It should be like an 84 rest count. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? It's the respect. But would I find him intimidating? I don't think I'm intimidated. I just think I have such a deep respect for someone who's invested so much in me as a person, as an announcer, and as a businesswoman. You know, a lot of the things that I've done professionally was because of a conversation we had in his office that's literally shaped and changed the way I am today. So that's my experience. I can't speak for everyone else's experience. That doesn't mean that he's not intimidated for someone else, because he does have a deep voice. He is like I said, you ever had a daddy? That, you know, mama might say, did I tell you to clean that room? And all daddy got to do is just look at you.
Just look at you, right.
All he got to do is look at you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So,
hey, I would rather my mama yell than him look at me. I'll tell you that.
Right. And look, if you live it right, ain't nothing to be scared of, right? You
scared? I guess that's the thing. Like, I'm literally an old lady in a shoe. I mind my business and go. I'm not intimidated by Dr. Zachary as much as I'm intimidated by losing what I've worked for and what I've built. And so I know what he's believed in and I know what I'm capable of, and ain't nothing that's going to be on the line for nobody.
Right. I hear that. And look, throughout this episode, we see Dr. Zachary, and I honestly, he wasn't giving me intimidating vibes. He was giving me like strong leader, decisive. And it just looks like when you don't mince words, sometimes people don't know how to take it. But remember, the people calling him intimidated are like 18, 19 year old kids. You know, they're still trying to learn their way around the school and around the band, and they don't want to get in any trouble. But, you know, Dr. Zachary seems like a great individual, and he's a part of the greatest fraternity in existence.
Hey, you know, now.
Man, Five Fraternity Incorporated. Shout out to my frat brother, Dr. Zachary.
Shout out to my father. The great body heat of the Blood and Mule Gamma chapter.
Bishop. Yes.
body heat.
And rude to the good bros. Rude to the bros. All right. So, stop it. Stop it. So, listen. The students in the opening montage describe the band as a family. And I would very much agree that, in a way, being in the March of Storm did feel like a family to me. A dysfunctional mess of a family sometimes, but I would be lying if I said, like, most of my closest friends didn't come from the March of Storm. Like, even in this moment, as they show random band members on this show, due to the vastness of our network and our connections, I can still identify people in the March of Storm right now, years after my tenure, that I know personally. Like, for instance, the first Hispanic drum major in the March of Storm, my brother from another mother, trombone player Jesus. I mean, he's all throughout here, and I'm like, I know him. But it's because of the family aspect of the March of Storm, or just at least building that network and connection of people who have the same goal in mind. So, TT, would you agree that the March of Storm past and present feels like a family to you as well?
Oh, absolutely. That's big time family. I wouldn't be able to do what I do so well if it wasn't for that dynamic. It doesn't mean that we all get along or agree 100% of the time, but literally anybody who knows me knows I do not play. I am really sweet, really kind, really friendly until it comes to the storm. I don't play about my family.
Yeah.
I don't care if you don't like me. I don't play about you. If you storm, you mine. You my people. I don't play about you. It's really up behind you.
Yeah. And that's how it should be. Really, it should be. Yeah, I totally agree. So the primary conflict of this docuseries is that the March of Storm was ranked number 8 by the ESPN Undefeated. Now, while I don't think this is a scientific study of what a good band looks and sounds like, this is definitely something that even I, as a member of this family, but as an alum, take personally. So, TT, was this a topic amongst the band members throughout the football season, or is this just something that they're using for the show as kind of like a plot device?
Now, we definitely take any rankings personally to an extent because, you know, it's almost like the review of the people. The audience is the customer. And if you've gotten a low review, then it's definitely going to put you in gear to work harder to improve. We don't take it to the point where we're like crying and, you know, about to go throw our trumpets at the 50-yard line. No. But we definitely look within ourselves and go, how can we go harder? And even when we do, you know, overcome challenges, we still don't get comfortable. And then you also have to remember, which is one thing that I've learned throughout my tenure, not only as a band member, but as an announcer as well, is that you can't please everybody and that the rubric probably changes depending on what they're looking for in the moment. You could just be not what they're looking for in the moment. It doesn't make you less great. It just makes you lower rank from what other people were looking for. So I've learned to not take it personally. I'm really intentional about being completely oblivious to negativity. No rankings. I don't even read comments. I don't engage. I'm Beyonce to the BS if you ask me. And I learned to be that way because my peace has to be protected in order for me to remain in control of what I do. Because I am a part of the storm. If you hear, I don't say I'm TT on the mic and this is the storm. We're the storm. This ain't David Ruffin and the Temptations. Okay? we the marching storm, dedicate ourselves to a higher standard. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, but I know even though we are the storm, there is a separate entity that the world views as TT on the mic, the March of Storm. And I know sometimes criticism comes to me directly. And so I've learned a long time ago, whether you love me or you hate me, God bless you. You know what I mean? It's not going to kill my grind. It never stops my grind. There was one year when nobody liked me. Tough cookies. I'm still here 10 years later. You know what I'm saying?
Amen.
It doesn't, like, rankings only have as much power as you give it. Let it fuel you. Don't let it finish you. You'll always be fine.
Yeah, listen, here on this podcast, you will learn two things. Chappelle is a proponent of protecting your peace Like, that is my mantra, and I take that and I live it, and I hold it dear. And I, trust me, it's hard out here sometimes, even just putting yourself on a platform like an announcer or a podcaster where you're up for scrutiny, but protect your peace at all costs. I mean, it's seriously something that can help you with your mental health. And also, rankings are arbitrary and reductive. We say that here on Rob Has a Podcast all the time. And you just heard it here too. TT said it as well. So it must be true, right? Exactly. So the story here starts as we prepare for the vibes of homecoming, and we get the smooth sounds of our very own girl TT on the mic setting the stage for the epicness of homecoming. Now, TT, in your words, what is so important about HBCU homecomings, but specifically homecoming at Prairie View A&M University?
The food. Chunky Fry. They don't know
chunky
about
Chunky Fry. Whoop. That's nice. Like
now, man, the history. Being able to see where you started and how far you've come. Because mm-hmm. you're literally standing between history and the future at homecoming every year. You see classes of 50 years prior. I think this year we celebrated class 1970 and 1971. Mm-hmm. It was right in front of me. You know what I mean? And it was beautiful. It was a great thing to experience. And I got to also host the homecoming parade, which is I always think is like something else that is, Lord, I can't talk. I think there's something else that's important because you get to see so many different organizations that this community has just by this university. So from the trail riders to the Jeep clubs to the different high schools and middle schools, step teams, dance teams, you name it, they all come out. The bands, you know, they got high school bands, the Marching Storm comes out. It's a big deal. And for a lot of us, it's literally what brings us together, especially after a global, you know, the global pandemic really shaping and shifting how we celebrate homecoming this year. It was really different, but you see us still be resilient around that throughout the show. But for me, yeah, it's being around the community. Like this year for homecoming, you know, I didn't have the sea of RVs. That I love to see. I love the sea of RVs. That is my favorite thing about homecoming. And the perfume of barbecue. The
yes.
Fish fry and a little bit of liquor.
Just a pinch. Just a pinch of liquor.
And some old bruhs and Sarah's. Hey, baby, where you at? You hungry? You know what I'm saying? You always go, when I tell you so many people that's going to turn you every which way at homecoming, you're going to hear a story. You're going to hear a testimony. And then somebody's going to know you that you've never met. Like, baby, I remember seeing you. And so even though we didn't get to have that in the capacity that I miss, it felt good to still experience that in some sort of capacity. And the band, of course, like you cannot have the homecoming without the band. Are you kidding me? We are literally the heart and the soul, the seasoning, the gravy, the rice to your red of every HBCU you're going to come into contact with. And so it's important that that's respected. You know, you hear all the time, I just came for the band. They ain't lying.
They ain't lying, baby.
That's what zero quarter and fifth quarter is made for. You wonder why people come 2 hours early and leave an hour and a half later after the game. It's the band. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's so many different things. So many of your professors was once in your shoes. And so it's amazing to see everybody come back, that marching through the tunnel, coming down the street, roads being blocked off by the police, making sure everybody makes it through safely. The Saras coming through, frat coming through. Listen, it's don't get me started. I could talk about homecoming all day. Okay. Porque tú sabes, hablando de mi corazón, de mi escuela, okay?
Okay, look. Look, mira. We got plenty of time to talk about homecoming, you know, but I think that you outlined that, you know, like amazingly. For me, it's all about the RVs, all about the party. It's 2 days in my mind of just fellowshipping with my friends. I've been to predominantly white institutions homecomings before. I've worked at them, and I'm telling you, there's nothing like a historically black college and university homecoming. We just do it different, okay? It's just done. It's just different. Yeah. So I can see why this episode is centered around preparing for that. Our first feature of the episode is the segment about the drum majors. We are introduced to Aaron, a senior drum major. He tells us about how drum majors are leaders in the band, but they are also superstars because they get funky with it. You know, HBCU drum majors just do it different. We also meet the senior drum major and former winner of Mr. March and Storm pageant, Jalen, who explains the role of the drum major to be the bridge between the band and the directors. So, Jill, tell us about the drum majors as it pertains to the March and Storm.
Drum majors are actually more David Ruffin to the Temptations than I am. I just want to let them know, every week somebody's asking me, are they going to have a feature? Are they going to have a feature? So I'll be literally, what, are y'all going to have a feature this week? Don't nobody be going back looking for something I said. They be looking for a stunt that the drum majors, I was just watching one from last year that the drum majors did where they threw Jabari up in the air and came down and I was like, good Lord.
Oh, Lord.
Jesus. And he made it. And then threw some K's. They are the neighbor representations. I'm just, you know, it's their word. I'm just living it. Okay. I'm just more human to the whole situation. Okay.
Right.
The drum majors are literally, especially at Prairie View, they're the ones that literally starts it up. They're going to guide you through. They're going to entertain you. It's something about that cape. It's something about that hat. It's something about that mace. And it just tells the story. And ain't nobody going to hit them 90s like them. Ain't nobody going to break it down on the field like them. Ain't nobody going to lead like them. And you already know when they coming through to make way.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And Aaron definitely points out that, you know, although drum majors are different at HBCUs, so are your typical band members. You know, the typical band nerd stereotype isn't exactly what you would expect at an HBCU. Would you agree, TT, like when you think of a band geek, or, you know, whatever, at an HBCU, what kind of person are you describing?
When I think of a band geek, I think of myself in high school. I was the one that used to carry my trumpet or my cornet around campus everywhere I went, math class, science class, geography. And people used to laugh at me so much about being like it's the high school carrying the instrument around. But baby, when they got on the intercom and said, football members and band members come to the basketball courts at 3:15. Yep. And guess what? You gotta stay here. You gotta stay here. You know, it's different in college because everybody knows that it's a privilege. It's an honor. It's something that not many people are strong enough to do. And do consistently and execute in the manner that we do. And it's an honor to perform and serve in an HBCU band. And I don't look at us as band geeks because ain't nothing geeky about it. Ain't nothing dorky or lame about it. We are just literally scientists of the fine arts and of arts and performances. And I think that we should be respected as such.
Yes. I mean, we are student athletes and student musicians at the same time. And we are also and trained dancers because the things that the band has had me doing as someone who would consider themselves a musician first when it comes to, you know, like my athletics ability, I'm definitely going to put the trombone above, you know, my ability to play football or something of that nature. But like, I didn't sign up to be a track star and a dancer and to play at the same time as I dance and in the rain. And
can
all
you
those
tell
stuff?
Them about the upper brass ministry and how we was up here marching the whole 90s while like playing like 16th notes back to back, while also doing footwork, dance routine, fast cadences. Can we talk about the practice field? Do they not know about how you have to duck and dodge holes in practice?
Yeah. No. Seriously. I mean, I think back to those 7:45 a.m., you know, like at the band hall at 7:45. So that means you had to been up at 4 o'clock in the morning, go breakfast, and then go to the band hall. Yeah, exactly. Like you had to get up early so you could go to the band hall first. Then you go get breakfast. Then you go back to the band hall. Then you go get lunch. Then you go back to the band hall. Then you go eat. Then you go back one more time. Right.
And you're going to stay in practice until it's done right. You know what I'm
until
saying?
It's done right.
That's what people don't understand. Like, it's the commitment. It's the dedication. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you know, complains about, oh, y'all be doing it too long. But, you know, there's a reason why we are here to this day. There's a reason why we've been televised. There's a reason why we are getting the platforms to show what we do. It's not because we decided to sleep when we could have been rehearsing. It's not because we decided to chill when we could have been learning a song. It's because in those moments where we could have chose to just relax or sit down or do whatever, we took that extra time to put in the extra work that shows how extraordinary we are as a program.
Yeah. And look, it pays off. There are definitely days where I remember being at practice and seeing the football team go in while we were still out. And then seeing the football team come back out while we were still out.
They used to dance while we would have power hour. I remember that. I was I love my football jealous. Team, though, but I used to be so jealous. Like, dang, maybe I should just go play football.
look, if I wasn't already committed, you know, then maybe I would have thought about it.
I was definitely football for girls. I would have played.
Tapped out. So our next segment here is about our Black Foxes. So we meet Kaylin, the captain of the Black Foxes, also known as Hammy. And she describes the Black Foxes as sassy, cute, and sexy when appropriate. TT, I know you have an affinity for the Black Foxes. She says it's tiring, hard work, perseverance, and a daily grind. And as they practice on the field, we see a moment between the senior Black Fox, Wesley, and one of the standouts of the episode, the sophomore Shelby. It looks like they're practicing, and Shelby is trying to speak up about the way the counts are working for the routine. They get to the practice, and honestly, they look great, and they end with Hammy asking them all to make sure they're COVID tested and to keep studying, because, of course, they're students first. Speaking of COVID, TT, what is the role that COVID played in the band season from your perspective? But also, did it have any effect on the filming of the show that you can reveal, or, you know, anything that you would like to point out due to the restrictions of the pandemic?
The global pandemic in itself literally put a halt in everyone's lives directly. The year before, we couldn't even perform, you know, as articulated in the show. The Foxes only actually performed one game, and that was without the band because of just the severity. You know what I mean? This year alone, we've had to be more innovative about the way we practice and where we practice to stay in compliance with the guidelines that have been implicated due to COVID-19 to make sure that we've protected our kids. One thing about this whole pandemic is that it affected the way we've practiced. We have to take out time to ensure everyone is getting tested. I remember at the beginning of the year, me and my sorority sisters actually sat after practice. I'm talking about till 11 o'clock at night, and tested each and every band member before a game, and then tested ourselves. Because everybody had to get tested. I, even when I work from home, keep COVID tests on me because we have to remain tested to stay in control of, you know, how anyone could be exposed. And so at the end of the day, it was a thorn in our side, but we pushed through it because that's what we do. We are the marching storm. We don't sit in our storms. We march through it. And yes, we see us actually do that. But there was definitely some obstacles that we had to face in the way we've practiced, in the places that we've practiced, because some people don't understand that just because our bodies can probably fit into a room doesn't mean that it's safe enough for us to be in there and still protect us from a deadly virus or a deadly, you know, sickness and illness like COVID. Like, Jesus Christ, yeah. You can't be so close to each other. There has to be a social distancing situation. And if you're in a room that's not properly ventilated, how are you protecting if you have over 300 plus instrumentalists and dancers and staff members? Not everybody recovers from COVID the same. These are things that we've had to consider. I, for one, have asthma. So, you know what I mean? You know, it's only one of me. There is not an announcer section. If I get COVID, oh, what a silent night it will be. There's been many times where I wanted to go places, like when there was the National Battle of the Bands, and it was the first Battle of the Bands since the pandemic, and I knew it was going to be dope. I could have went, actually, but I literally sat at home and watched people's Snapchats because it was literally put in my head, either you potentially risk getting COVID at an event that your band is not even participating at, or you perform with your own band the next week. You know what I mean? Right. Because if you get COVID, then now you got to miss 2 weeks. And that's a lot when you've already missed a year. So yes, COVID's impacted us. And you'll definitely see throughout the show how we handle COVID and how we really try to stay on top of it. And I really believe that that's really all I can reveal, because honestly, the season's going to do a great job of, you know, elaborating on everything for sure.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Yeah, the COVID thing is very serious. And, you know, if you're listening to this, make sure you're wearing your mask, get vaccinated, all that good stuff. But take care of yourself. Stay safe. And let's try to beat this pandemic thing, because we are still in the thick of it. Back to the episode. It's clear that Hammy and the Foxes are concerned with the band's ranking as well, and would like to bring the Storm up from, you know, number 8 to that number 1 spot. She announces that the Foxes are looking for leadership for next season, and she expects people to demonstrate their abilities. And this is when we find out that Shelby is interested in being a captain. So, like I said, TT, I know you are basically Black Fox affiliated, if not at the very least, honorary Black Fox. What do you think the Foxes are looking for in a leader? And based off of what we see in this episode, do you think Shelby has what it takes?
I think, and you know what's funny? When I was watching the episode last night with my family, I told them, I said, that girl can fly. Mm-hmm. I watched her practice. You know, what people don't understand is I go to band practice and I learn the show as if I have a spot on the field. Mm-hmm. I learn the choreography to the dance routine, to the Black Fox routines, whatever Twirl and Thunder's doing. I'm peeping it because I look for windows in the arrangement to speak. But when I see Shelby dance, it's like literally the girl is like the Air Jordan. She just move like, even when they're just marking it, she's the one that's going to take that extra leap, and she's going to do it full out. If not the turns to protect her knees on the practice field, you're going to see her kicks hit right here. And it's like, how do you do that?
Yes.
And I definitely see her as a standout of the Black Foxes. She's captivating. You know, every year is that one of few captivating members of each team. But I think what the Black Foxes are looking for is not how much you can be a crowd favorite, but how much you can actually lead. How much not only can you be respected, but how well have you left an example or led by example of being respectful? Definitely your technique. You have to be top tier. One thing about the Black Foxes is they dance, and technique is of utmost importance. And so we're not here to just throw a couple of stand counts, baby. We actually move. You're going to see some fourth and fifth positions, some sachets, some fortes, attitudes, heel stretches, and, you know, all of that stuff. And you got to be able to do it all, but also leading in academics. You have to be the example. You can't just represent well in one part of, you know, what it takes to be a captain by, you know, making excuses for not representing well in another. So I don't know who would be captain, because those girls can eat. And I feel like it's about time that they get the recognition that they've been so long and deserving. It feels good to not have to go horse on my own.
Yeah.
Hyping them up, because I literally be hyping them up. I be doing their dances.
Yes.
On the sideline with them. And I love my babies. And me and Hammy, we literally engage throughout the whole year, just cutting up, because that's my sister right there. That's my baby. But to be a captain, you have to be a lady. You have to be a leader. You have to be focused. You have to be the example, even when no one's watching. When no one's in the room, you still have to be the example. You know what I mean? And I hope that whoever gets it is able to, you know, exhibit that at all times. Because, baby, ain't no permanent spots on the field.
No. Right.
So.
Yeah, that's great. Well put. We will see what happens with Shelby moving forward, especially throughout this episode. Also, throughout the episode, we get a ton of montages of our beautiful campus and what it has become, because it definitely didn't look exactly like this when I was there. back in the olden days, you know, when the pictures were black and white. We briefly see Professor Hopkins, the associate director of bands as well, kind of leading the band through their practicing. And while the band practices outside, we are introduced to Nehemiah, a junior mellophone player from Most City, Texas. He explains that he grew up hood adjacent. And band was something that was important to him to keep him focused. His father was a musician, and it looks like Nehemiah has taken on his father's passion as well. Throughout the episode, Nehemiah's story will be told through the lens of the dance routine committee. He tells us that the dance routine committee is responsible for creating the dance routines on the field, and it's a chance for the newer generation to show off the dance trends that they think are popular. Now, TT, I know you are quite the dancer. Yeah. What is your experience with the dance routine committee? Because if I remember correctly, you were an integral part of that committee back in our day when we were on the field.
I actually was. I used to be the, I don't even know how to say this respectfully, but.
It ain't no respectful way of saying it.
I was the chunky five test. I was, I represented for, I represented for the plus size ministry. The Chunky Five Beta National Honorary Culinarily Artistic Sorority Fraternity Unincorporated members that I founded on the campus of Prairie View A&M University,
Jill, did you have a favorite dance routine at your time at Prairie View?
Did I have a favorite what now?
Dance routine. Did you have a favorite dance routine at Prairie View?
Did I have a favorite dance routine at Prairie View while I was there? It definitely had to be a State Fair Classic dance routine. Probably my last year marching. And I remember it was one where we was like popping. And I was in the front. And I remember I was dancing so hard that my trumpet slide flew out.
Yes.
And like, they got me, but they ended up having me on camera. And I got a lot of love after that one. That's probably one of my, anytime we go to State Fair Classic, that was one of my favorites. But I played an intricate part. Not only could I dance, but I was the one that set the example for a lot of plus-size band members that if Jill can do it, you could do it. And so it kind of pushed me to definitely, you know, just stay in a little shape of some sort so that I could be able to help you. But I wasn't one of those half-dancing band members that didn't know it. I was out dancing some of those who've been there before me. I was out dancing some of those who were probably more fit than I was. So, you know, I remember even as a freshman, I was at the dance committee meetings and learning and stuff to help teach. So,
yeah. Again, TT, I remember those days. So you ain't got to explain it to me. And if y'all could go back and find the clips, look for TT because you're out there cutting up on that
field. You will find me. So 2011, 2013, you will see me on that field on the U side.
I love that. U side. Shout out to the U side. Nehemiah ends up telling us that his commitment to the dance routine committee is a glimpse into what it could look like if he tries out for drum major in the future. Again, we go back to Jalen, the senior drum major we met earlier in the episode, and says that Nehemiah has a short fuse, which could be bad for morale. And I guess we'll see throughout the season if Nehemiah has what it takes to put his fuse, you know, aside and make sure that you can present yourself in a way that people want to be led by you. You know, as a drum major, you will be in the front. So we will see what happens with that. Our very next scene, we meet Cardavian Willie, a euphonium player in the Marching Storm. Cardavian has two businesses, including catering and dessert making, as well as selling hair extensions and beauty supplies. Cardavian does it all. Okay.
Yes.
But she recently got kicked out of band for having an altercation with another band member named Martavia. Apparently Martavia and the friend group would ghost Cardavian when it was time to hang out. But from her perspective, they showed up when the food was on the menu. I mean, look, struggling college student. I could see that. But Cardavian has, you know, that didn't go over well with Cardavian. Felt like she was getting used. And so her big plan right now is to bake cookies to give to the band and the band staff as a way to get back in the band. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this in my entire life where someone is baking their way back into the organization. Now, TT, is there a specific thing that someone could bake you to make you decide to put them in your organization? Like, what are you looking for?
For me, there's, so I love I love Cardavian. I love Montavious. Them are my babies. I've had, actually, personally, have relationships with them. I'm not, you know, you have some band members, being a part of a big organization, you have some members that you know because of Storm affiliation, and you have some people that you know that you've genuinely engaged with. And, like, I'm still waiting on my lashes, Cardavian, boo.
Why you baking cookies and stuff? What lashes at? Huh? Right. Why are you baking cookies and stuff, Cardavian? What lashes is it?
Like, remember when I used to be on live late at night doing my makeup, and Cardavian said she was going to bring me some lashes, so I'm still waiting on my baby to bring me some lashes. It ain't, you know, I'll say this, because I know Dr. Zachary, and I know what he looks for when it comes to trying to redeem yourself. You could buy him a new car, and it won't make him feel convinced enough to bring you back to the Storm, because the bigger picture is, are you sure that you're ready to be that leader and be the person you need to be for yourself before joining this organization again? Because if whatever issue you had couldn't be resolved in a better way, have you learned the lesson? What have you learned about yourself in this moment to make you feel like you've grown enough to where I could trust you to be back a part of this organization? Because God forbid if this altercation happened in front of the president, or if this altercation happened in front of, like, you just never know. So you have to be very careful how you respond to them. Trust me, there's been many times where I have had disagreements with people, and I've had to be very cognizant of how I handle this situation, because I know what I could lose. You know what I mean? And people oftentimes look at that as, she's scary. She ain't gonna do that. But it's like, pay my bills. Feel my ride. Oh my God, like, who are you? Like, I can't let you mess that up. So I think that it's a beautiful thing to see Cardavian's growth and Montavious' growth, and to see that this definitely is going to be an opportunity for them to learn life lessons, how to handle situations, because you're not always going to be able to just get into it with someone. And, you know, I hope that this was a lesson that taught both of them how to articulate when there is an issue. You can still hold a friend accountable without it turning into such a drastic altercation, whether it's verbal or physical, where there's regrets at the end, where you're losing something that you've worked so hard for. You know, Martavia was a whole section leader. I've always watched her as I perform. She's one of the people that I interact with at performances. People don't know that, but I actually look to my students when I'm performing, and we have our own little nonverbal communication throughout the performances. And it's like, you know, when Michael Jackson was younger, he used to look over his shoulder to his brother. That's how I am with my kids. You know, just look over your shoulders, honey. And so it's going to be weird not being able to look over my shoulders and see, because at the end of the day, sometimes your decisions, you don't realize in the midst of them when you're making them that it literally can jeopardize not only you, but everyone else around you. So I hope that, you know, I hope that this is a learning lesson for them and that they grow in this. Whether or not they are able to get back in the band again or not, I just hope that it definitely shapes how they respond and address things in the future, especially having a business. Like, you will not be able to pop off or check everybody, even if they're wrong.
Yeah.
Even if they're wrong. A lot of times people have attacked me and were wrong, and I still didn't say anything or do anything. Not because I'm not about it, okay? Because I am. But because, like, you're not worth it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. Look, I like this storyline because I feel like there are seeds for growth here between Cardavian and Martavia, but we have to get Martavia's side a little bit later on in the episode. This moment with Cardavian, she's just saying, like, look, I'm not ready to apologize. That's not happening. But I will give y'all some cookies and hope that that works.
Right.
I don't know if that's going to work out for her, but who knows? We see her kind of talking this out with one of her friends who, at this current point in the episode, has remained nameless. But Cardavian does tell us that she's not non-binary and, you know, whatever pronoun fits her appearance, that's what she wants to go by. And that, you know, while talking to her friend, she says, hey, apologizing and learning what you did wrong, just like you were saying, TT, is probably the right move to get on Dr. Zachary's mind, like good side. Maybe not baking cookies, you know. Maybe not baking cookies, but we shall see.
We shall see.
Of course,
I might get my cookie, but you know, it's fine.
Listen, this has to be a hell of a cookie to have somebody put you back in the game.
Let me tell you something. If Doc eats your cooking, you cook because Doc does not play about people's food, okay?
Look, I feel his body.
But no, I feel like that, you know, we're family. And whether you make a mistake or not, you're still going to be family. Doc loves you even when you mess up. That's what people need to understand about our band directors love you. Even when you're wrong, it's just, you know, you still got to go to timeout, but I'm going to give you a hug before you go. And
gotcha.
I'm going to hug you while you're there. And I'm going to hug you when you get out of timeout. But you got to go to timeout.
You did the crime. You got to serve the time.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that storyline a bit later on. Back at band practice, we are introduced to one of the sections that I know many of the casual marching like band enthusiasts are looking forward to talking about, the drummers. Back in my day in the Marching Storm, way back when, the drum line was pretty much like the premier, you know, group for the Marching Storm. Like it was the Black Foxes. It was the drum line, better known as the B, the O, the X. While the drum line is no longer called the Box, I think the importance of having a good drum line cannot be understated in regard to having a successful marching band. We meet bass drum player Trey, and he tells us that he is a father of a beautiful daughter named Ariana. He loves being a father, and he even wears Ariana's name on the side of his hat. So I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, such a cool thing seeing a young dad like showing expression, so much love for his child. And he has the meeting with Martavia. So this is when we meet the person that Cardavian had the altercation with. As TT said, Martavia is the piccolo section leader and a senior education major. So it's very important that Martavia gets back on the field this season because this might be her last one. So in this conversation that Trey has with Martavia, they basically talk about their sibling relationship as the two of them didn't really get along too well, but eventually they both realized they was from Dallas, so it was all good. That is relatable content. I'm not from Dallas, but let me tell you, the Prairie View A&M University history of Dallas / Houston rivalry / Houston beef / unity, it runs deep. Yeah, bring in the Port Arthur Beaumont people and you're going to find some like either heated turmoil or like the most passionate friendship of all time. And so they bond over their prospective cities and Martavia ends up confiding in Tay like, hey, I got kicked out and it's because Cardavian basically got upset that we apparently were using her for food. And by the time the Labor Day Classic rolled around, which is one of the bigger games of the year, Tay was just fed up. Martavia was not having it. And she basically called Cardavian to the carpet like, hey, let's go to the grass then since you running out your mouth so much. It seems like the real problem with the dissolution of friendship here is that Tay started leaving threatening voicemails and calling Cardavian out on Twitter. So the next thing you know, student conduct was in her email inbox and saying, boom, you have been cyberbullying. And now she's kicked out of band. So, of course, Trey tells Tay that they need to be adults and find mediation between her and Cardavian. But just like Cardavian, Martavia doesn't seem any like a little bit interested in apologizing. Like both of these women have decided we ain't doing it. We just not. So TT, from your perspective, who right? What's happening here? What's who the
hey,
drama?
Yo, Key Sweat, kick it. Everybody.
Everybody wrong.
Everybody wrong, man. Listen, like I said, I've been in situations where I've been cyber attacked, verbally attacked. And it's not an easy thing, especially when somebody's poking the bear, right? But at the end of the day, I could bite your head, but I also could walk away. Yeah. And it's so hard because in our community, we come from a knuck if you buck culture. How dare you? Especially
my era. Wait, a run up, get done up era.
Right, if we beefing, I got you era. When College Hill was actually at, I will say this. Like I said, this is family. And I think the lesson learned here was there's always a different way to handle a disagreement. And when it, like, if you did these things, then I hope you look back and realize what it cost you so that it doesn't cost you anymore. Let's make different decisions. I don't want Martavia or Cardavian to look at this as, oh my God, I've ruined my life. Like, y'all are babies. You're still young. You just needed to learn this so that you can realize there's so much more to this world than this moment. And you don't want to miss out on so many of the moments based off of the decisions you make right now. So I'm not on either one of them sides impartially. I'm like this. Grow up. Like, if you feel like, and trust me, I've been their friend.
Yeah.
I'm the one that used to cook. And everybody, and I noticed people used to only come home when I had something to eat. So I stopped cooking. Or I stopped letting people know I was cooking. And I stopped being available. Hello now. Because I already know the moment I pull out the Holy Trinity and the garlic and everything else, people gonna start knocking. I ain't gotta answer the door.
Yeah.
Baby girl, what are you doing? I didn't get a call or a text that you can hold her. So if that's the case, if you feel like that, that you're being used, and you know that if that's what it is, then hey, it is what it is, but just stop making yourself so available. And if you're hurt by that in response, then when I get hurt, I remove myself. I'm a Capricorn. I will remove myself from the whole equation. I don't need to be around people who make me feel like I might be a burden. And maybe I think that they're so young, like, they're like, what, 19, 20, 21, maybe? At that age, I was still trying to define what friendship really was. You know what I mean? And I think this is a great opportunity for them to learn not only what kind of friend they want, but the kind of friend that they want to be and the kind of person that they want to be. And so I hope that they take this and let it really help them learn themselves and learn from this and grow from this, because... I hate to see it. I love my babies, and I love them. I don't play about my kids. I'll never slander one, and you know, all of that. No, that's my family. But I do want them to see, like, there is so much more you can do in the way you respond when people don't agree with you.
100%, 100%. And we'll see. You know, Cardavian tried to, you know, pass out the cookies later on, and to, you know, various results. And we'll also see when Martavia goes and talks to Dr. Zachary later on about, you know, her feelings about being put back in the band. But until then, we have other things to talk about. We see the band preparing for homecoming, doing a stadium entrance with Professor Hopkins telling everyone that, you know, the amount of work, I guess, the Storm has in front of them for homecoming, right? He's not happy with being ranked number 8 or number 2. He's coming for that number 1 spot. And for homecoming, the band wants to put on a good show to impress the alums. Back at Hobart, Texas, Hobart Taylor, the Taylor Building, the place where the music stuff goes down.
Disneyland. We see
Disney, yeah, the place the dreams are made of, whatever, at Hobart. Yeah, Kaylin and the sophomore Fox Shelby discuss what this homecoming means for them. This is Kaylin's last homecoming, and she is pumped, but she doesn't want to take it for granted. Like, she's taking it very seriously, whereas Shelby, this is her first homecoming, and she is lit. She's excited. She's ready to do the things. Due to COVID, PV homecoming was canceled, sadly, much to the chagrin of all the alums, including myself. But, you know, safety first. But this homecoming of this season was the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Black Foxes. So during this season, the current Foxes have the pressure of performing for the legacy Black Foxes. They're going to pay homage to the women who paved the way, basically, for them and created what the Black Foxes are known as, you know, today. TT, when you were a performer in the band and also as an alum and an announcer, do you feel like there's added pressure to perform in front of the alumni, whether it be at like a big game at homecoming or even like when the alumni like myself pull up at practice and kind of just stand out on the field and watch?
Is an elephant heavy? Do dogs bark?
Can a fish swim? Is a pig
right?
Is a pig?
Listen, is water wet? You know, people can debate that. I'm like,
Is it pork? Is it pork?
No, listen, is bacon pork? How about that?
Right. How about that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There is always a pressure of performing in front of the people who came before you, because it's almost like as a former communications major, I'm sure you can agree and attest that I can't watch movies regularly anymore. I'm always looking for director's edits or errors or like jump cuts or, he could have filmed that differently. Or why did they take so long to shift the angles? Of, you know, I'm always thinking about that. But when it comes to, you know, the storm, as a freshman, I remember, you know, you out there and you see, oh, there's a lot more people at band practice today. Are they all marching? Huh? Mm-hmm. And they're not. They're watching you. And it's like watching your founders watch you. Mm-hmm. And all of these footsteps that came before you that had a spot on that same field that you're on. It's them literally seeing how well are you upholding that history. And that's something that you never want to take for granted, because literally they didn't get to take it for granted. And so you do go harder. There is a deeper respect and a connection. And there's always going to be an alum that feels like, do better. Go hard. Yeah. You know, we didn't. Is this the best you can do? You know what I'm saying? So it's always that you always have to like an extra prayer before coming to practice or before performing, because you don't want to disappoint yourself. You don't want to disappoint those who come before you. And you definitely want to let them know that you carry the torch with nothing but respect. So it's humbling.
Yeah, it is. It is. I've been in those shoes and I've been on the other side. And as an alum, sometimes you're like, do better, because you can tell.
I cannot imagine you as a freshman. Oh my God.
Oh man. I was just a wee lad. you know me as I was the same person I've always been. I am very polite and well-mannered and soft-spoken.
Okay. And
the things that you know Chappelle to be. But moving forward, I digress. So we see Kaylin telling Shelby that due to COVID, you know, the band has not performed as consistently as they have in the past. They've missed games, et cetera. And so next season, when the new leadership comes in, they're going to have like a whole new world of, you know, competition and stuff like that, that they've done. Like a lot of them haven't experienced the world, you know, in the band prior to COVID. Like they came in during the pandemic. So this means, you know, like the new leader is going to have to roll with the punches a lot more. And it does seem like Kaylin has some concerns about Shelby's ability to lead the Foxes, only when it comes to her shorter fuse. We hear the same thing later about Nehemiah, but it does seem like between Nehemiah and Shelby, if there is smoke, those two want it when it comes to getting the things right on the field. You know, Shelby, like, she has a short fuse. She's going to pop off whenever. I think they call it, like, she's like the clapback queen. And
the snapback.
Right. She's coming back easily on you. And, you know, and I think you talked about it earlier. There's a time and a place for that kind of energy. And there's also a time to keep that to yourself, kind of, you know, take the humble position and then address it later on when it's not in front of a bunch of people. So, like you said, you think Shelby could have a handle on this? I see it. I see the potential. And so I'm excited to see what this could bring if she decides to go out for a leadership position.
You know, these are the greatest leaders, though.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that, you know, are the most snapbackish. It's just about shaping and molding and learning that you're going to have a deeper patience if you want to go to, you know, higher heights within this band organization, because at the end of the day, you can't just yell at everybody, everyone, but you're going to exhaust yourself. And, you know, to be honest, the way your team works, like I watch Hammy and how she communicates to her team, how she leads. She's very nurturing. Mm-hmm. She's very disciplined, but she's extremely articulate and professional with the way she expresses herself to make sure that everybody gets it. And I think that that's something that we need to hold fast of, even after she, you know, no longer is captain, because that is what helps build strong teams. It's not how well you can curse somebody out or yell at somebody. It's really how well you can communicate effectively and do things in a way that executes proficiently that stands mm-hmm. out extraordinarily. But, you know, that's just me. When it comes to Shelby, I think that she's going to be great. You know, when I see her on the field, we have our moments where we have our own little inside jokes. Mm-hmm. And we actually play truth or dare between each practice to see what we're going to do when we get off the field. Like, I think Labor Day Classic, Shelby dared me to say, do it like a Shelby say, baby. I actually did it, and they got house. Or like, you know, I dared her to run off the field like a crazy person.
Oh my gosh.
So you knew, like, it's our little inside jokes, but she's really passionate. And I see a lot of me in her as far as with just her sense of humor. And she's vocal. She just wants everybody to get it. But she is going to be the one that speaks up and say, hey, we can't do that. But I think if she just works on her delivery, that's going to be the difference. It's not about whether or not she can lead. She can lead. But it's how you lead will make the difference between how well of a leader you are.
Right. Oh, and we shall see. And I did point out that Nehemiah seems to be having a similar struggle with the dance routine committee, because it's not that Nehemiah can't lead. I mean, even some of these other band members are saying, like, you know, nobody dances like Nehemiah. But at the same time, you can't have a short fuse with people. You know, you can't
dance all you want, but that doesn't make you a great drum major if you have a short fuse. This is not the good old days. You know what I mean? You have to think about You know, the consequences. You know, what if you blow a fuse with Dr. Zachary when he's trying to tell you to do something? You don't want that smoke. And so you have to know when to, like, turn it on and turn it off. And if anybody knows about, you know, going from 0 to 1 million, it's me. One minute I can be the sweetest person in the room, and the next minute I can make a whole crowd of 100,000 people mad, and I'll be sitting there eating some chips, and it's not my problem. You have to know when and when. So I think, again, if they can just hone in on that and those leadership skills and, you know, stay on top of their academics, then yeah. But, you know, you got to be more than popular and able to dance to lead. Anybody can do that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Even when I was watching the little montage of the dance routine committee, first of all, I think I spotted my little cousin Chad. Shout out to you, Deuce. I see you. But yeah, I was thinking about that as well, because I am by no means am I a bad dancer or whatever. And I've always had respect for the people in leadership. But there definitely is a moment that I can remember when I was in college and I realized, like, I'm grown and I'm not going to take a lot of, like, crap from an 18, 19, 20, 21 year old when it comes to the way they're addressing me, you know, and everybody has a different level of tolerance for that kind of thing. But there was definitely a moment at Prairie View where I was like, oh no, y'all not talking to me, you know, and you have to definitely address me differently, you know, at that point in my life.
Yeah. And you know, I came into the storm older than about 94% of the whole organization, minus the band directors and the band assistants. I was 22 when I came in. A lot of people graduate around that time. And a lot of people didn't understand the testimony behind it, because the way I moved, how humble I was. You just thought, she's just young but mature. You know what I mean? If I never told you my age, you would have just thought, oh, she cool. You know what I mean? You know, I knew how to respond. I grew up in a very swack style of a family. My older cousin Brian Chapman marched in the same band along with Marcus Mitchell, Ducky. I have a lot of family, you know. I have a lot of family that came through the storm, and I have a lot of family that came through the hill as well. And so I'm very familiar with, you know, the culture. But at the end of the day, like I said, your delivery is going to affect how well you lead this storm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like you said, it's about humility. You got to find a space where it's, hey, like, I know that I'm grown, but also I can learn. And that comes from the delivering and having a short fuse or whatever and being able to manage that. But that also comes from receiving that kind of stuff. So like I said, I was talking about 19, 20, 21 year old Chappelle and how he wouldn't have stood for that. But I think even like if I had to give myself some advice, maybe, you know, humble yourself a little bit more, just because you're 22. Look, 22 years old in a college band, that means you're an OG and you've been here before. Like you done lived a long life in college band. And
I should have came in with swag hours. That's all I'm saying.
Right. But like looking back, that's a baby. Like you were a baby. Stop it. So
I was just cute. I have a baby face. You know what I mean? To this day. Yes.
Like, look. Relatable content. We move forward to the scene we kind of alluded to earlier where Martavia goes to talk to Dr. Zachary about getting in the band and her position as leader as the piccolo section. She's talked to the conduct office. She feels like she's done her time. She's had to do the necessary things. But when Dr. Zachary asks her, you know, like about the situation and if she's willing to apologize, she just point blank says no. Like I'm not apologizing. And Dr. Zachary asked her a really good question, I think, which she says, he says, like, to examine how her passion is her biggest strength and her biggest weakness, because it looks like she has a passion for this very thing. Like she knows that she felt like she was not wrong and that she does not need to apologize for it. But in the same way, that passion could be hindering her as someone who is a senior who is going to graduate. It's very important that, you know, after you graduate, you go into the real world and you get a job and a career and you have to deal with people that you not necessarily like. And you have to apologize in situations that you really don't think you know, that merit that. Like you said earlier, even when you're wrong, sometimes you have to humble yourself and kind of bite the bullet for the sake of progress and communication and collaboration. And so this scene right here was very powerful for me because I loved watching it and seeing, you know, Martavia kind of bare her soul and say, like, you know, I want to be back in. And Dr. Zachary, to point blank, without batting an eyelash, just say, Nope, you cannot be back in the band. I mean, deadpan the rest of the season. Sorry, I heard you. I see your tears, but absolutely not. And I thought this was an interesting choice. TT, were you surprised by this decision for Dr. Zachary? So TT just took a sip of water. So listen, I think TT's quote earlier was, you could buy Dr. Zachary a car. And he wouldn't let you back in the band if he didn't think it was for the greater good. TT, is that what we're getting at?
Yeah, Jeff, that's exactly what we're getting at. It's not a surprise. Anybody who knows his demeanor can tell when I know what's coming. Like I said, I look at Doc like a dad. And so I can always sense when I know what's coming. It's been many times he done told me no on things. I'm just like, okay. Yep. Many times I've stopped in the midst of talking just because I know what's coming. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it doesn't mean that he doesn't care. Like I said, again, Doc will love you and still walk you to timeout. You know, it's about being accountable for your actions because this could have went way left field. There could have been even far more consequences, you know, and repercussions. You're on a college campus. You represent so many different things that are bigger than yourself. And you have to take that into consideration when you're making decisions. And, you know, one thing he talked about was her plan. You know, where do you want to go beyond here? And when I stepped away from the storm in 13, I thought to myself, I want to do more than say that I just did band. And this is the same girl who played trumpet since she was 10 years old, who stayed up all night learning her music and prayed and cried that one day she'll be a part of this big band. And this was my dream, right? This was my Prince Charming. Band was my first love. And I got here and said, okay, I've done enough. I need to find myself and who I want to become beyond the storm so that I don't spend my 30s trying to figure out who I am. You know what I mean? And I had to do that. Away from the storm, but the way it brought me back to it was in such a beautiful way. I don't think that there's ever a moment where you can't come back to the storm in some capacity. I think that you have to evolve and grow. And if you're not willing to move forward, even if it's just to say, you know what? I'm going to hold myself accountable for the part that I played.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's all you need to say is I'm going to hold myself accountable for the part that I played. And I think both of them could do that. And that could actually have really helped them. But I think, again, these are life lessons that they have to learn. And I think it's beautiful that they're getting to learn it here. And I love the way that it's depicted. It's not to humiliate them. It's because these are beautiful things that a lot of kids in our community need to learn now, because no one's going to owe you anything when you leave these doors called college. No one's going to owe you that. And so I pray that she does get to see herself in a better way. And I pray that, I don't know, I just pray for better for both of them. And whatever happens, y'all just going to have to stay tuned.
Right, exactly. Perhaps we get more of Martavia saga throughout the season as she works her way back onto field, potentially. Maybe Dr. Zachary changes his mind. Who knows? You got to tune into every other episode.
Production ministry.
Right, right. We will see as the season continues. Eventually, we see the band practicing the field show, and we all see the part. Like all the pieces coming together, you know, as the band chants and marches up and down the field. There's roughly 300 moving pieces in this band in different directions, moving simultaneously. But the practice is necessary because it's homecoming. People expect the best at homecoming. Drum major Jalen tells us that this is the season that is like a start of something fresh, because due to the pandemic, band was essentially put on hold for a year. Now the spotlight is back on them, and this season will be their opportunity to show what they're made of. The episode ends with a Marching Storm chant, and they want to make homecoming the best show of the season so far. Some of the words of the chant, this chant was not around when I was there, but some of the words of the chant that stood out to me were through hard work and preparation, even through the cloudiest days. Because it's the storm, right? And it don't rain on the storm. We both know that. We live that. And I love seeing that perpetuated in this new generation of March of Storm members. Aaron says that he expected the storm to be able to handle all the diversity and stuff that they're going through because they are the best. And the episode ends, leaving us to wonder if the storm will ever be able to climb the ranks and prove that they are the best once again. I guess we'll have to stay tuned to the rest of the season to find out. But TT, that's the show. That is March. That's episode one of the premiere. What did you think? What are your overall feelings about how the show depicted you and the March of Storm on this particular episode?
It was fire. It's still surreal to me. Like I said, my family's been checking in on me all day. I'm a crybaby. I'm the most sensitive person in my family, according to my cousin Trey. And I am the one that's probably going to cry at everything. And it's not because I'm weak. It's just, I just care. So I'm really passionate. And so when I saw my face in that radio station, when I heard my voice and how it sounded, it was like that 15-year-old girl. I could just feel her smiling back at me. That girl that stood in the State Fair Classic and that cotton bud and said, "Mommy, I'm going to do that." That was probably the most groundbreaking moment for me, because I don't think a lot of people understood my prayers at night. It's okay if you don't, because you don't have to. It's not your prayer. And it probably wasn't your assignment too, but people don't understand what it took for me to get here and what I've sacrificed to get here. And it just feels so good to be seen in a light that actually shines, showing me doing what I love with who I love, behind the university that I love. So it was humbling. I'm so grateful. I can't thank my Marching Storm family enough. I can't thank Prairie View A&M University enough. I can't thank my family enough. My cousin Brian Bojangles Chapman.
Oh boy, TNT, boy, what's up?
For keeping his hands on me. My cousin Onisha, my cousin Trey, because like all of my family members really served a major purpose in pushing me towards staying hopeful about coming to Prairie View and actually being here and then hosting, and they played a major part in all of that. than in this girl that a lot of people are about to see on TV. And, you know, I hope that if nothing else is said, it's that I want to put a sparkle in another little girl's eyes like this very band did for me. It's literally a dream come true to do what I do and to do it here. And I think the reason why I do it so well is because I mean what I do. This isn't a job for me. It's my ministry. And so a lot of people have prophesied this day and it's surreal, you know, and I look forward to seeing where it goes. I look forward to seeing more of the storm. I think the show did a great job of telling our story from so many different unique perspectives. And I pray that people sees representation in the best way within themselves, that people like Cardavian too has a voice within the storm and within their storms, and that you can be an entrepreneur and also be a college student, and you can have conflicts and be held accountable, but still be loved. You know what I mean? And so I think that's what this whole episode was more about, was the accountability rather than just the preparation for the show. It's more about like seeing us and seeing our hearts behind the storm. So I look forward to next week and seeing what's going to happen. I'm excited. I'm happy. And
yes,
I've watched the trailers millions and millions of times and I have not cried yet. So, ha ha.
Okay. Not yet. But there's a lot of season. There's a lot of season in front of us and plenty of time to make TT cry. So we shall see what happens. But TT, I do have to say that I am so proud of this show, The Marching Storm. TT, I'm proud of you. Like you and I are about the same age, but like you said, you came into The Marching Storm a little bit after me. And so I got to see the beginnings of who is TT on the mic. And I am so proud of the person that you have become and, you know, everything that you do, I support. So thank you for being here with me today and talking about this amazing show with me. TT, do you have anything you want to plug? Anything you're working on? Tell the people where to follow you and your shenanigans or how to book you for your services.
You know what? Listen, if you want to follow me, you can definitely go to Instagram at TT on the mic. That's T as in Tom, T as in Tom, on, spelled correctly, V spelled correctly, M-I-C. Mike, Indigo, Charlie. And then you can follow me on there and it's going to take you to Instagram, Twitter, my Facebook handles, everywhere. And then also, if you want to tune in, I host a radio station. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. The Midday Jam with your girl TT on the mic every weekday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The KPBU 91.3. You can check me out. Stream it on kpbu.org from 10 to 2. You'll hear me there. And also for the Marching Storm, because how could you not talk about the storm? If you want to follow them for more information, updates, PVAMU Storm on Twitter, the Marching Storm on Instagram, and the PVAMU Storm, no, the PVAMU Marching Storm on Facebook. And if you want to give and it goes directly to the band, if you feel so compelled to support the Marching Storm, go to giving.pvamu.edu. And that'll definitely be a place that you can give. And it'll take you straight to the Marching Storm where you can be able to give your support, because we always need the support and always appreciate it. And so I look forward to seeing more of us. And, you know, hopefully this is the beginning of Super Bowl performances, NFL, NBA performances, interviews with professional athletes, you know, award show performances. I'm just going to plug it all. Like, I'm trying to tell y'all, like, y'all are going to see my face. You're going to hear my voice and you're going to feel my presence a lot more. Don't forget about me, because I promise you, you were like, what that on Chappelle? Look at Jesus. Look what Jesus did. So
yeah,
if you want to see me, you can follow me there. And also I'll be, you know, revamping my website very soon. And if you're getting married, I also host weddings. So
yes,
yeah, hit me up.
Please hit her up. TT, you're unforgettable. And I know that people are going to just, you know, people are just going to throw opportunities at you in the future moving forward. And you're going to be amazing. And I can't wait to watch and, you know, in the wings and be like, I knew her. I know her. You know,
you know me.
Yeah, that's my people.
Listen, I have to tell you everywhere I move now.
Yes, yes, because I am disrespectful and will be like, where are you going and why don't I know?
But right. Birthday, if we traveling, you already know you're the first person I'm calling.
Right. I just need to, like, I might not even just go, but I just need to know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like, am I right? Right, exactly. But, and of course, if you're listening to this, you probably already know me, but you can follow me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show and follow the at nothing but RHAP account to keep up with the Nothing But Netflix podcast I host here on Rob Has a Podcast with the podfather, Rob Sesternino himself. I cannot thank Rob enough for allowing me to podcast on his network. And to talk about this show specifically with my dear friend TG. So also, if you are a new listener of Rob Has a Podcast, check out the other shows we cover by subscribing to Rob Has a Website, where I'm sorry, Rob Has a Podcast, where wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can also visit robhasawebsite.com and postshowrecaps.com to hear more of me and the TV shows I've been covering. Along with tons and tons of other shows and other content, we have it all. So if you enjoyed hearing me and TT cover this show and would like to hear more Chappelle content, leave a 5-star review on the Rob Has a Podcast Wrap Ups feed or the Rob Has a Podcast feed and let us know what you thought. Remember, we need 5-star reviews only. These ratings will help the podcast rise in the charts and perhaps more people will hear about our perspectives on the historically Black colleges and universities, Prairie View A&M University, and Black marching bands around the country. So with that, that ends the podcast. So support HBCU, support the arts, and enjoy this season of March. For myself and TT, take care, everybody. Peace.